Today, more household trouble in the Land of Oz. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, we've got to the end of June and I've just run my updates relating to mortgage stress and rental stress and overall financial stress for households in Australia. And the news is not great. For those of you who've not seen the show before, let me just remind you that we take data from our household servers, which are running all the time, 52,000 there any one time. And we update our models at the end of each month to enable us to estimate what's happening with regard to household finances. We can slice the data multiple ways. Think of it as a Rubik's Cube. And we can also begin to take a view as to where prices, for example, may go in the future based on our scenarios. You'll see our scenarios are not future forecasts. They are sensitivity estimates. But if we take our mortgage stress data, the price trajectory information, the buying and selling intentions from our surveys, the migration data, and the broader economic information, put it through our core market model, run it through our scenarios, we can then take an estimate of what may be happening at a postcode level, right up to a region, state, or indeed an all Australia level. So it's a pretty powerful way of tracking what's going on. And by the way, if you're interested in the conversation about a particular suburb, we can do that via our one-to-one service. This is a confidential individual discussion with me. It's not financial advice, but I can look at my data and look at the underlying trends, and I can look at stress, house price data, and also think about where the sensitivities may be pointing ahead based on our modelling. You can book a time for a conversation via Zoom or indeed by phone, typically up to an hour. And there is a cost involved because there's quite a lot of work to do to put this together. If you are interested, you can contact me by my blog and send me a message there. Or you can actually go to the blog. I'll put the link in the comments below and you can see specifically the one-to-one offer that's there. I'm booking about 3 to 5 weeks ahead at the moment because I'm quite busy with lots of people trying to work out what's going on with regard to the property market. So as I go on, let me just remind you again that I have a very specific definition of stress. There are many different definitions of stress out there, from 30% of income or maybe taxable income, through to those who apply some sort of underwriting metrics. But we define stress in cash flow terms, money in, money out. So if you have more outgoings, excluding one-off discretionary items, than income, we define households as stressed. So if they've got a mortgage, they're mortgage stressed. If renting, they've got rental stress. We can also do the same for investors with cash flow pressures. And if they have cash flow pressures on their investment property, we can spot that. Or indeed, if they're trying to dispose of their investment property, we can capture that too. And we can aggregate the data to look at the total financial stress down to the postcode level. We can talk about a percentage of households and a count. Generally, I think that the count is a better measure simply because it's the rule of big numbers. Now, just going back to the definition of stress, the RBA put this little chart up some time ago, which I find quite an interesting way of highlighting the transition from mild budgetary pressures through to more severe pressures, through to missing payments and ultimately insolvency. I want to stress that what I'm doing is measuring the financial flow pressures at the mild end of the spectrum. So it's an early indication of potentially more trouble ahead. And that's, I think, important because it does lay the foundation then to understanding that budget pressures ultimately can transition to missing payments and even insolvency, but that journey can take a few years. One reason why we're seeing significantly higher levels of stress at the moment in Western Australia, despite recent bubbliness over in the West. So to the end of June 2024, you can see here that the overall trend for rental stress continues to deteriorate. We've now got 77.3% of those in the rental sector having cash flow pressures on their rents. This is a disaster for many households, and unfortunately, it is very widespread across the country. We've seen a very consistent rise. And of course, it's accelerated recently in the last two or three years, not least because the average rental increase for many people has exceeded 20%, and new rents in particular are still rising. Mortgage stress is still wobbling around the 50 to 51%, and that's essentially saying half of households with a mortgage have cash flow pressures. It also means, of course, that half of households are doing fine still. But again, comparing it to February 2020, when 32.9% of households had difficulty, the proportion has climbed dramatically thanks to the bigger mortgages and also the higher interest rates that people are now paying. And of course, the expectation is higher for longer. So we would expect the yellow line to continue to rise higher, although the cost of living support and the other government interventions through the budget, which are going to come in from 1 July, may in the short term suppress some of the stress, at least for a little while. The third line on the chart relates to the debt to income ratio from the RBA. They've just released the information to the end of March, and I've extended that out for the next 3 months to May. So it's a 184.7. It's actually dropped slightly. A couple of reasons. Remember that this is all households, whether they've got a mortgage or not. And we know that some households are paying down their mortgage because there is significant diversity between those with significant financial pressures and those who are actually doing very well at the moment, thanks to big incomes and less debt. So overall, the proportion of people are taking the number down. But of course, those with a mortgage are one third of households, and there's still a very high debt to income ratio. So here is the data for June 2024, and I'm displaying this information by state, and I'm showing it as both a count of households and as a percentage of households. And I'm going to focus initially on the percentages. I've highlighted in yellow where the percentages have risen compared with last month, and in blue where they've dropped, so that you can see in the ACT, mortgage stress fell slightly. In New South Wales, it rose to more than 51%. In the NT, it rose. In Queensland, it fell just a little. South Australia, it fell. But it rose in Tasmania up to 69% of households. A slight easing in Victoria to 53%, but a rise in Western Australia to 53%. And the grand total is 50.71%. Now that translates to 1.84 million households in mortgage stress, a very significant number. But of course, this is talking about those who are borrowing. Not all households, and not all households borrow. Looking at the rental stress is higher in the ACT with 85% of households in difficulty in cash flow terms. In New South Wales, it's up to 83%. It fell slightly in the Northern Territory to 26%. It fell in Queensland to 74%. It fell in South Australia to 68%, but it rose in Tasmania to 78%. It rose in Victoria to 77%, and rose in Western Australia to 72%. And overall, that gives us a grand total of 77.3%, or 2.39 million households in rental stress. Looking at investor stress, we've seen rises in the ACT to 26%, New South Wales to 27%, the Northern Territory to 13%. There was a slight easing in Queensland at 21%, in South Australia at 16%. There was a rise in Tasmania at 21%, Victoria at 21%, Western Australia at 22%. And overall across Australia, it was 23%. And that translates to just over 680,000 stressed investors. These are people with cash flow pressures on their investment properties, and some of which are planning to sell. And the final metric in this slide relates to financial stress. Financial stress relates to all households across the states. And there, 53% of households in the ACT have financial pressures, 54% in New South Wales, 30% in the Northern Territory. They all rose. There was a small fall in Queensland, 48%, and South Australia to 44%, a rise in Tasmania to more than 50%, a small fall in Victoria to 49%, a small rise in Western Australia to 50%, and the overall total didn't actually change. It was 50.38%. And that translates to 4.9 million households with financial pressures across the country, which means that roughly half the country has financial pressure. But of course, as I've said before, this means that the other half are doing well. And this is very much a question of which half are you in? Now, on this chart, I'm just breaking it down by our segments. And once again, I'm going to highlight that the segment with the highest level of mortgage stress are young growing families, where a lot of first-time buyers exist at the moment. They've also got a lot of stress in the urban fringe and other areas too. As you can see, it is quite widely spread, but young growing families and the urban fringe is where a lot of the problems are. Turning to rental stress, the first generation migrants to Australia, we call them the multicultural establishment, have the highest level at 86%. And then we've got the mature stable families and the young affluents and wealthy seniors all well up. And it again highlights the fact that rental stress is touching lots of different segments. Investor stress tends to hit those households with more significant portfolios of investment properties. And that means that young affluents at 42% has the highest degree of investor stress. This is because quite a few young affluents are buying the wrong types of property for investment purposes and getting into difficulty quite quickly. For example, buying a significant number of high-rise apartments that are perhaps now not performing as expected, not least because of the rising costs of repairs and also the strata fees. Exclusive professionals are also on the list there because, again, they have a high portfolio value and count. And looking at the overall financial stress, the segment with the highest level of financial stress, never mind whether they're owning or renting, are young growing families at 70%. But we can also see that on the urban fringe and the battling urban as well as the multicultural establishment groups, the first generation Australians and the young affluents, are all significantly impacted. So once again, I want to make the point that mortgage stress takes no prisoners. Pretty much every segment across Australia is being hit. And at the financial stress level, this is even more of the case. But I will highlight again that that still means that half of households across the country are doing just fine. Many of those, of course, have no mortgage and no rent. And many of those are still enjoying the savings that they made and the high incomes that they have, thanks perhaps to the performance of their investment properties or their share portfolios. And from a capital appreciation perspective, as I highlighted recently, the ABS data showed that actually household wealth is higher than ever. So if you're in the right category, you might well be doing okay, even if from a cash flow perspective, you have issues. Next thing I'm going to touch on is just the estimate level of defaults. One of the things on the core market model is the ability to make an estimation of where defaults may well be occurring over the next 12 months. Now, defaults, of course, as I showed earlier on, is down the list. It's many months or many years after the initial cash flow problems. But nevertheless, we can see that the average default rate is highest in Western Australia, sitting at 4.2%. And that would mean that more than 18,000 households risk default. It's at 2.9% in Victoria and New South Wales, with 28 or 30,000 in those two states actually being impacted. In Queensland, it's at 3.3%, with 24,000 potentially being impacted. And in the other areas there, the percentages may be lower, in the ACT at 1.9%, in Tasmania at 2%, and in the Northern Territory, it's a very low count, of course, because there are very few households in that area. Nevertheless, at an aggregate level, estimated defaults over the next 12 months stand at 3.1%, and that translates to more than 113,000 households in strife. And let me just make the point here, and we're seeing this in our data, that households quite often will get some initial support from the banks through the hardship schemes or having a direct conversation and moving to an interest-only solution or maybe extending the loan period. But now we're getting to the point where some of those 12-month windows are closing and now more people are being forced to sell. That's not necessarily a foreclosure process, but it's effectively pressure from the banks to walk away and sell and get out and use the equity to repay the bank. Unfortunately, I don't think this is going to change. I think we're going to see more people getting through the mill here. And I expect defaults to continue to rise slowly over the next 2 to 3 years because I don't think interest rates are going to come down. And I'd also make the point that the government intervention, particularly with some of the power and some of the tax cuts, may provide some temporary relief, but no more than that. Now I'm going to turn to our scenarios. Now, our scenarios are a way of exploring different futures and to think about the consequences, but let me highlight again, this is not a forecast. This is not an estimate of what may happen. It's trying to show you some of the sensitivities we've got in our models. Things change, and therefore it's simply a stake in the ground from today going forward. Now, we can look at our three scenarios, and if we do that, we can see that the best scenario, which I call the Goldilocks zone, is that we don't see any further increase in rates, so they stay at 4.35%. They're going to fall through 2025, not in 2024 in my view, while inflation eases in line with RBA expectations, wage rises continue to be quite strong, we don't get a recession in Australia, and migration remains above average, which gives you a bit of a flavour of what some of the levers are in terms of home price growth. The base case is a soft landing where we see rates staying at 4.35% through 24. Inflation falls but then rises later and stays above target until 25. We don't get a recession in Australia and migration falls to average. And there is a chance here that we might see a little bit of a rate rise but then a rate cut later. The third scenario is our nightmare scenario. Now here we see that rates rise above 4.35% this year, which means that we have mortgage rates at 7.25% plus, and they stay high through the rest of 24 with inflation. Inflation stays high, but unemployment starts to rise and wages growth stalls, and we ultimately get a recession here. Then rates get cut, and in the meantime, migration drops below average. Now, let me translate to what that may mean. And this is our aggregate chart across the whole country. So in the best case scenario, we still think that over the next 3 years, there could be further home price rises up to 11.2% over 3 years, based on a zero baseline today. In the base case scenario, though, we are more likely to see a bit of a fall, maybe around 8% over the next 3 years. The worst case, the nightmare scenario, would be a more significant fall, although my own view at the moment is that that's relatively unlikely because the government will probably throw more things at the property market to try and keep prices high because of the financial stability risks. Units follow the same trend, although the falls may be a little lower. Now, we can also break this out into each of the states. WA looks pretty strong in the best case scenario with a rise of 23% over the next 3 years. The baseline would be a rise of 3.8% for houses over the next 3 years, and the worst case would be a fall of 16% over 3 years. Units would follow, although again, they're a little less sensitive to falls and rises compared with houses. If we jump across to Queensland, again, it's pretty strong with a rise of 70% over 3 years. The base case for houses would be a fall of 2.3% over 3 years, and the worst case would be a fall of 22% over 3 years. Looking at units, again, following the same sorts of trend, but not falling quite as much in the worst case scenario. In New South Wales, still some growth in the best case scenario for houses, up maybe 9% over 3 years. The base case, a bit of a fall, and the worst case, a significant fall over the next 3 years, and units following pretty closely, although the falls will be slightly lower. Turning to Victoria, there is almost no growth in our best case scenario over the next 3 years in Victoria, unfortunately. The base case would see for houses a fall of about 18% and the worst case a fall of nearly 40%. Units following on pretty closely but not falling quite as much. And in Tasmania, we see possibly a best case rise for houses of 1.4%. The base case a fall of 18% and the worst case a fall of 38%, so significant downside risk in Tasmania, and units following on but not falling quite as far. Now, I do have the baseline data down to a postcode level, and this is my classic Wollongong scenario to give you a flavour of what information I hold down to a postcode level. You can see there that I have information about the count of households. I have information about the mortgage stress, the rental stress, the investor stress, and overall financial stress. I have information about the composition of the market in terms of houses, units, and other types of property, and also the people ratio. In other words, what's the average number of people living in the property? We've also got the vacancy rate data and also the gross investment and net investment yield. So in this particular postcode, the net investment yield is negative. We're seeing that with quite a few postcodes now. We've also got information on the average taxable income, both from the ATO and also from the household census. And that translates then into a disposable monthly income calculation, where in this particular example, we have about $5,600 available on average per household. And the average mortgage in this postcode is around $2,400, or 43% of the average income. The rent is about $1,900. And that's about 35.4% of the average income. And in fact, to get access to all of the postcode level information, you can subscribe by our Patreon program. We actually have various levels of support, and I appreciate those who actually support us with our work here. We don't do this for profit. We do this because we think there's a really important conversation. But specifically, you can subscribe for $50 a month plus GST and get hold of the information down at the postcode level. It's about 2,000 postcodes that have come out each month. This information gets sent out to our Patreon subscribers at this level in about the second week of July. And this will contain all the detailed information for all the postcodes. And it shows the information as shown here for Wollongong for each of the postcodes. And it also allows you to do comparisons between, for example, the net investment return in particular postcodes, or indeed the financial stress pressures that exist across the country, which may help to make some better decisions in terms of purchasing or selling or renting. Now, I have this information available for every postcode, and generally what I do is to make a specific show relating to our more detailed analysis. So if you're interested in getting the up-to-date data on a particular postcode, if you put the postcode in the chat, I'll then incorporate another show over the next week or so. Just before I close, I will just highlight the fact that this is a really tight time for many households. And so I quite often are asked, what should I do? Well, the first thing to do is to make sure that you understand your cash flow. In other words, money in, money out. And it is quite easy to do that. So you can go to the ASIC Smart Money website and get some forms there to help do it. Or the other alternative, which is the one I quite like, is the AFCA's Statement of Financial Position. This is actually something which is now available. It takes about 10 or 15 minutes to complete. And it basically breaks out household income, living expenses, property, other assets, the debts, and also some thoughts about how to structure where you are and what you might do. You can create a PDF on this, and that PDF actually is quite useful in terms of putting a stake in the ground. The other source of help is the National Debt Helpline, 1-800-007-007. And I would highlight the fact that there are other websites out there offering some help, but often you can end up paying for that help. The National Debt Helpline, of course, has government support, and there are financial counsellors available there. They're very busy, of course, at the moment, a lot of people needing help. And nevertheless, this is a very useful number to keep if you have difficulty. And sometimes having a conversation with a financial counselor can really help to really separate out the priorities. What I see quite often with households who are in difficulty is that they don't necessarily pay off the right thing. So, for example, pay off the high interest rate debts first. Don't get into the buy now, pay later world. Don't just grab another loan. And the more you can structure your thoughts and the more that you can actually have a coherent conversation with your bank, or indeed, if you're in the rental situation with your landlord, the more likely it is that you can find a way through. And by the way, I would highlight the fact that we are going to see some relief through some of the low pay awards that are coming through, through some of the government intervention with regard to the electricity support, and also the tax concessions and bans changing thanks to the stage three tax cuts. So this will help some people. The question, of course, will it help enough people? And will this be inflationary or deflationary? Of course, the government is claiming it's going to be deflationary. My own thoughts is it's probably going to be more likely to keep inflation high. And I think the RBA will look through these sorts of numbers as they deal with the question of quashing inflation. So the bottom line is this: households have significant pressures. There are things that individual households can do and should do. Shouldn't necessarily be looking to the government to solve this problem. Inflation will be with us for quite some time. And therefore, getting a grip on your own finances is really, really important. And some of the suggestions I've made will perhaps help. Anyway, if you'd like more detailed information, or indeed a snapshot of an individual postcode, put it in the comments below, or indeed send me a message via the DFA blog, and I'll try and assist. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.